Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today, a message to elected leaders who think so little of their constituents that they can't tell them the truth.
The speaker wants to let members know we're going to defer action on this bill.
Plus, a police officer's sign-off.
Stop allowing the left and the media to use our profession for political gain.
As some conservatives cheering him on, but at whose expense? Plus, a Seattle-based university proves once again that wokeness comes before all else. Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you so much for listening on this Monday. And I will say on this Monday, you find a much calmer Brandi Cruz than you would have on Sunday. On the Undivided Digital Show on Sunday, I was going to talk about a political story on a political subject that I have discussed many times on Undivided. But I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, Brandi, you should probably calm down a little bit. Why don't you save it for the podcast on Monday? Well, it's Monday. And here we are. And I want to talk about emergency power reform. You have heard me say those three words a lot over the past few months. Emergency power reform. If you're in Washington state, you know that our governor has near unchecked power during the state of emergency around COVID. If you're outside of Washington state listening to this, I'll give you a little refresher. Washington is one of only a few states in the entire country where the legislature doesn't have the power to essentially end a state of emergency that's been called by a governor, or to at least sign off on the mandates that result from that state of emergency. So for 2 years, Republicans in Washington state have been beating the drum on this issue. They believe that Governor Jay Inslee has abused his emergency power, that we should no longer be in a state of emergency, certainly now in the third year of the pandemic and the third year of the emergency declaration. And they have tried, so far to no avail, to get Democrats on board with putting some reasonable checks and balances on the governor's power. One of the reasons why I've talked about this issue so much is I believe it fits perfectly within the mission of this show, and that is to use common sense and reason and encourage our elected leaders to do the same. The reality is emergency power reform should not be controversial. It should not be partisan. There are Democratic and Republican-led states that have checks and balances on a governor's emergency power. Washington obviously does not, but if there is any situation that has shown us the need for it, it is the pandemic. It is the coronavirus pandemic. But for reasons that I can only guess the motivations for, Democrats have been completely unwilling to do anything even resembling serious emergency power reform. Now, maybe it's because they don't want to anger the governor. Maybe it's because they know that by and large, they're going to agree with everything the governor does. Maybe it's because they know that the chances of there being a Republican governor in Washington state one day are very slim, and therefore they don't feel the need to have checks and balances on a governor's power. Maybe it's because they don't want to give Republicans something they've been asking for 2 years because they feel like it'll be a win for Republicans in an election year. And again, I'm just speculating about the cause of Democrats not being willing to get on board with something that is frankly such a no-brainer. Now, earlier this year, there was a little glimmer of hope, a little tiny little sliver glimmer of hope, when Senator Emily Randall, a Democrat who represents really one of the only swing districts in the state Senate, decided to introduce Senate Bill 5909. It was a tepid attempt at emergency power reform, perhaps something to please the more moderate voters in her district, but it was still an acknowledgement from a Democrat that perhaps there ought to be some checks on the governor's power, even if those checks are pretty weak, which we can acknowledge, and I've talked about on this show, Senate Bill 5909 would do nearly nothing because it would require complete bipartisan agreement to end a state of emergency from the leaders of the House and the Senate. That's a pretty high bar to meet. However, it was something. And on this show, I urged Republicans, if Senate Bill 5909 is all you get, if that's all the Democrats are going to give you, even if you don't think it goes far enough, you've got to take it. Just pass the damn thing. Because I told them if you shouted from the rooftops for 2 years about the need for emergency power reform, and then you voted against the only opportunity to get any whatsoever, then you'd be the ones who'd look disingenuous. But today, on Monday, I can tell you without a doubt that it is the Democrats who looked disingenuous. And here's why. In the early morning hours on Friday, about 1 in the morning, the State House of Representatives was debating Senate Bill 5909. You might be wondering, well, why so late at night? Well, one, they obviously don't have respect for the public, and they want to debate an important bill in the middle of the night. But two, it's the end of the session, and sometimes these things go long as they try to fit a bunch of stuff in. Inexplicably, after about 30 minutes, the debate ended. And as it ended, so did any hopes of passing Senate Bill 5909 before the end of the session.
The Speaker wants to let members know we're going to defer action on this bill, but it will retain its place on the second reading calendar.
Now, what exactly happened for such an important bill to finally come up for debate in the House and suddenly have that debate end after only 30 minutes? Well, I'll tell you what happened. Republicans, at 1 in the morning, after waiting 2 years to have a meaningful debate on the topic of emergency power reform, Republicans had the audacity to share their opinion that Senate Bill 5909 did not go far enough.
We should have a say in whether or not we're prohibiting activities going forward. We think that that's fair.
That is Republican State Representative Chris Corey, who we've had on this program before and who was the sponsor of a different bill, House Bill 1772, which would have put into place much stronger checks on the governor's power. So Representative Corey, during this debate in the early morning hours, offered an amendment to Senate Bill 5909 that would have given it some teeth.
Urging the body's adoption of this amendment this evening, what it would do would be strengthen the underlying bill and provide what I believe are meaningful changes and updates to the bill and provide some additional balance to the constitutional powers surrounding emergency powers.
His amendment would have ended a state of emergency after 60 days unless the legislature extended it.
2 months is plenty of time for an underlying emergency. It gives the governor broad authority over those 2 months without having to immediately report back to the legislature.
As debate on that amendment hit the 30-minute mark, Democrats put an end to it with no explanation given.
The Speaker wants to let members know we're going to defer action on this bill, but it will retain its place on the second reading calendar.
But on Friday afternoon, we got an explanation from Democrats. Boy, did we get an explanation from Democrats. And it's this explanation that angered me so much that I felt the need to wait to talk about it until today, until I'd had a couple days in the sunshine with my dogs to really get my mind right and remember what the point of this podcast is. So I'm going to try. Democratic Representative Sharon Shoemake tweeted this, and this is not a joke. She tweeted, "Republican filibuster killed Senate Bill 5909 on emergency powers reform." Let me read that again. A Democratic state representative tweeted, "Republican filibuster killed Senate Bill 5909 on emergency powers reform." First, let me explain something. There is no filibuster in the Washington State House or in the Senate, for that matter. It's just not a thing. This isn't Congress. So I can only assume that she's using that phrase loosely and is trying to insinuate that Republicans talked for so long, they ran out the clock to pass Senate Bill 5909. But might I remind you that debate only went on for 30 minutes. For 30 minutes on arguably one of the most important bills this legislative session. In a follow-up tweet, Representative Shoemake wrote, "I wanted to run a reasonable bill. It's been 2 years and we should be reforming the emergency powers based on recent experience. Yesterday, when we tried to run 5909, every Republican wanted to talk on every amendment. This drew out the clock on other priorities, so it was pulled." Now, I know some of you don't speak political bullshit, but after a decade covering politics, I can assure you I'm very fluent in it. So let me translate that for you. That Democratic lawmaker thinks you're stupid. She thinks you're dumb. She thinks you aren't smart enough and that she'll read that tweet and you will blame Republicans for failing to pass emergency power reform. Now, I don't know who her constituents are, but I can promise Representative Shoemake that the people who listen to this podcast aren't morons. And they sure as hell know that Republicans are not the ones to blame for a failure to pass meaningful emergency power reform. Republicans weren't to blame when you didn't do it last year. Republicans weren't to blame when Democrats refused to advance any meaningful bills on the topic this year. And Republicans aren't to blame when you tried in the middle of the night to shove through a tepid bill on emergency power reform, expecting them to just shut up and take it, and then killed it when you realized they weren't going to sit quietly without trying to make the bill better. I am so exhausted with politicians who want to treat people like they're stupid, who want to gaslight them. And that's what those tweets are. That is gaslighting at its finest. You take responsibility. You take responsibility as a party for not making this a priority. You take responsibility as a party for coming up with a near meaningless bill so you could tell voters in an election year that you did something, hoping that they weren't smart enough to look into what the bill actually did on their own. Have some respect for the people who you are supposed to represent. And if you don't want to pass emergency power reform, then don't do it. But don't spread some bullshit lies about it on Twitter. And yes, I promise you, this is the tamed down version of my response to those tweets. Have some respect for the position that you hold, the position of power and influence that you asked for when you ran for office, and have some respect, have some goddamn respect for the people who put you in that job, please, for the love of God. And even for those listening who were not in favor of emergency power reform, who didn't like the Republican proposals, that's fine. This podcast isn't about telling you what to think. It's about telling you to think. And it's about encouraging you to expect more of elected leaders, both those who you don't agree with and those who you do. And no voter deserves to be treated like they're stupid. No voter deserves to be gaslit. If your elected leader wants to support a bill or oppose a bill, they should at least have the courage to be honest about why. That is the bare minimum of what we should expect of the people who represent us. So my anger with Representative Shoemake isn't about whether she supported meaningful emergency power reform or not. It's the fact that her instinct was to deceive the public about why it didn't move forward. And that is wrong. Okay, two more stories to get to, but first, I want to take a minute to tell you about the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. I've been telling you guys about how they stepped up to help me when I left my job in corporate media. They're basically like, hey, we've got your back. We love the mission. It is in alignment with our values. And so we really feel like we can support you. And I feel the same way about them. Their mission is really simple. They want to get you into your dream home as quickly as possible. And that's what we want, right? If you've ever gone through that process of trying to buy a new home, or maybe you're trying to refinance your existing home so you can turn it into your dream home, you want to get that process done quickly, but you also want to make sure you're doing it with someone who you can trust. And I know that you will love working with 1530 Mortgage and that you can trust them with your home buying or remodeling journey. Find out more at 1530mortgage.com or call 206-207-7777. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS number 1761573, equal housing opportunity. Okay, a couple more subjects I want to cover today. There's a video going around from a now former, I don't know the current status of his employment, but at the time of the video, a police officer in Tacoma, Washington, which for those who aren't familiar, it's a suburb south of Seattle. It's one of the biggest cities in Washington state. He was apparently signing off the job and decided to record a video. So in the video, you won't be able to see it, but he's in uniform. He's got his camera facing him. He's sitting in the driver's seat. He's clearly, you know, on duty. I'm going to play this video for you in its entirety.
For the next minute or so, I'm a police officer for the Tacoma Police Department. This message is to the police in D.C. and other cities that have spineless and tyrannical leaders such as mine. Stop allowing the left and the media to use our profession for political gain. The Freedom Convoy is coming, and you will be tested. If you violate people's constitutional rights due to the orders of some liberal tyrant, conservatives will turn on you, and they absolutely should for you doing so. Let us not forget that conservatives support law enforcement as they realize it is essential to upholding our rights and freedoms as Americans. Please do not repeat what happened in Canada, as it only fuels the liberal narrative, divides our country, and goes against everything America is about. If you are going to stay in the profession, do it honorably. Remember, your oath is ultimately to uphold and support liberty, which is the absolute foundation this country is built upon. Police each other. And now for the fun part.
I'll pause it quick to say, here's where he's signing out of service.
X-ray 144 Tacoma. X-ray
144.
I'll be signing off for the last time. Just want to say cheers, boys, and let's go, Brandon.
Okay. I am someone who supports law enforcement. I think I've made that very clear. If you're a good officer going out, doing your job with integrity every single day, you have my full support. I've also been someone who understands that bad cops make the job harder for good cops, that police officers are given and have asked for a tremendous amount of power. They have the power of life and death over individuals. They have the power to take someone's freedom away. It is a job of enormous responsibility. Responsibility that no one forced them to take. No one forced them to become police officers, to put on the badge, to carry the gun. There's a lot of conservatives who are celebrating this video. And let me say, there's some things in the video he says that I agree with. Like, I really hope that the freedom truckers in the United States aren't treated like the government of Canada treated them there, which was absurd. And I would say the same for any peaceful protest. There's no doubt Justin Trudeau went too far. But besides that, I want to say something about this video. And I said this on Twitter earlier today, and I got a little flack for it. How dare he? Honestly, how dare he? We are at a period of time in our country where policing has never been more difficult or more dangerous, where you have a large segment of the populace that not only doesn't trust law enforcement, but wants to see law enforcement as an institution dismantled, a sentiment that was so successfully spread that major U.S. cities, including Seattle, jumped onto the defund the police bandwagon. Police were called Nazis and serial killers. And some cop with an axe to grind wants to do something as selfish as making a stupid video and posting it to social media that is only going to help embed the worst stereotypes about police officers. How dare he? How dare he do that to his fellow men and women in uniform in Tacoma? To make their job more difficult, to make their job more dangerous, to use his badge as a platform to send a personal political message. It's selfish, and it's irresponsible, and quite frankly, it's shameful. I know I have people listening to this who disagree, but consider whether that video helps to bridge the divides in our community around law enforcement. Consider whether that video serves any real purpose beyond stroking this man's personal ego and helping him spread a personal agenda.
If you violate people's constitutional rights due to the orders of some liberal tyrant, conservatives will turn on you.
And to be sitting there in your uniform with your badge and all that that represents and to sign off like this.
Let's go, Brandon.
That's ridiculous. And that tells me that you didn't deserve to wear the badge in the first place. So Officer Hollingsworth, if you're still an officer, I hope that video was worth it to you because you just made life more difficult for your brothers and sisters in blue. Oh, I feel like I've had some, it's been an aggressive episode. I feel like I need something lighthearted, but I've got one more story I want to discuss. I don't necessarily, I'm going to try not to rant about it, but again, I keep going back to how do we get to this place where common sense just goes out the window, and how can we bring it back from there? There was a story, you know, universities have turned into these just very kind of woke, cancel culture, weird institutions, not all of them, but many of them. And my friend Jason Rantz, you probably see him on Fox News a lot. He is the host of the Jason Rantz Show on 770 KTTH in the Seattle area. He had an article today that I could not believe. I could believe it, but you know. So the University of Washington Medical Center in Seattle has been in the headlines a couple times for the way in which they deal with issues around race in a very weird kind of woke-centered way. Well, Jason Rantz had this article for The Federalist. The headline of this article, award-winning HIV researcher forced into re-education for dressing up like Michael Jackson. So Dr. Julie Overbaugh, let me tell you a little bit about her. She was senior vice president at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center and a faculty member at the University of Washington Medical Center. She's won awards for her research on HIV in Kenya, according to this article by Jason Rantz. However, she did something very unforgivable. Back in 2009, yes, 13 years ago, Julie Overbaugh dressed as Michael Jackson for Halloween. Now, this Halloween party where she wore this Michael Jackson costume, it was at a lab at Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center. And get this, the theme of the party was Michael Jackson's album, Thriller. So to a Thriller-themed Halloween party 13 years ago, she dressed as Michael Jackson. Well, apparently, 13 years later, this photo found its way into an email that was sent to senior leadership at UW-Medicine. As a result, an internal investigation was triggered, and Dr. Julie Overbaugh was placed on administrative leave. Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center put out a press release about this incident. The title of the press release, Fred Hutch Statement on Racist Act Involving a Senior Staff Member. Here's a statement. says in mid-January, our Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion received an anonymous email attaching a photo of a member of the senior leadership team engaged in racist behavior by dressing as Michael Jackson, including blackface, as part of a Halloween celebration in 2009. The act depicted in the photo is racist, offensive, and hurtful, and we offer our sincere apologies to anyone who has experienced pain or upset because of the act or this photo. In response, we hired an independent external investigator, and we placed Dr. Julie Overbaugh, the leader in the photo, on an administrative leave of absence while the investigation was underway. The investigator talked with members of Dr. Overbaugh's lab, as well as some of her peers and coworkers, to determine whether Dr. Overbaugh exhibited a pattern of inappropriate behavior of any kind in the past or at any time while employed at Fred Hutch. The investigator found this was an isolated incident. Dr. Overbaugh has stepped down from her senior vice president role at Fred Hutch. She will continue working in her lab and will take a hiatus from her leadership duties in the Office of Education and Training. During that time, she will engage in an intensive education and reflection process. Holy moly! Okay. All right, let's get some things out of the way. First of all, dressing in blackface, don't do it. If you're white, don't dress as any other race, okay? Let's just don't do it. Don't do it. But we should acknowledge that it's only really become apparent in recent years how offensive that is. As an example, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, well, remember? He got caught wearing blackface at a 2001 Arabian Nights-themed party where he wore a turban and he had dark makeup on his face. And this came out during his election. It came out again. Same party, different photos a couple years later. He apologized, and look, he's the Canadian Prime Minister. And the party he was at where he dressed like that was 20 years prior. Now, most reasonable people, I like to think, can look at something like that from 10, 20 years ago and say, well, that was 10 or 20 years ago. I'm sure he wouldn't do that now. And in the case of Dr. Julie Overbaugh, the research center's own investigator found that this was an isolated incident, that Dr. Julie Overbaugh hadn't done or said anything racist to her staff or around people she worked with. And besides, this Halloween party, which was Thriller-themed, was actually at the lab. So certainly if there were people who were offended at the time, they would have said something about it. But the reality is, 10 years ago, people didn't think twice about these kinds of things, by and large. You would really think that as adults, if you know someone, you know someone's character, that you could forgive them for a Halloween costume they wore 13 years ago, and particularly at an institution where this person is doing very important work trying to cure HIV, that you could take her track record as an employee and not make such a big deal out of a photo that was anonymously emailed to you, again, from 13 years prior. But that is not the world that we're living in. We're living in a world of cancel culture, of outrage, when you're not allowed to accept someone's apology, when you're not allowed to think that a person can grow, that a person can learn. And that is a very dangerous place to be in. To do this to this woman, who has clearly no other blemishes on her record, and to damage her career over something like this that happened 13 years ago, is shameful. It is shameful, it is irresponsible, and it is not realistic to hold someone to the standards of 2022 for something that they did more than a decade prior. And then you have staff at UW-Medicine, not just staff, the CEO, Dr. Paul Ramsey, and the chief equity officer, Paula Houston, who come out with a statement and say the UW-Medicine community was, quote, harmed by the photo, and that they're going to convene a series of affinity group meetings to provide spaces for mutual support, reflection, and response. I am sorry, but if you have grown-ass adults working at a medical facility that need mutual support and reflection for a photo taken at a Halloween party 13 years ago, you got bigger problems on your hands. To put that ahead of the work that this doctor is doing is the epitome of fringe. And these are the people who are teaching the next generation. These are the people who are teaching the next generation of doctors and nurses. And that's really freaking terrifying. We have to stop this. We have to stop this mentality. Barry Weiss, who's awesome, used to be with the New York Times, now has the Common Sense Substack. She had an article that was great a long time ago. You should go read it. She wrote it for commentary.org. The headline of it was, "We got here because of cowardice. We get out with courage. Say no to the woke revolution." I just want to read you a passage from this article because I think back to it whenever I see a story like this. And I hope that these words resonate with you because they really resonated with me. So again, this is from Barry Weiss, written for commentary.org. She talks about the core beliefs of the, quote, woke revolution. And she describes it like this. Ideas are replaced with identity. Forgiveness is replaced with punishment. Debate is replaced with deplatforming. Diversity is replaced with homogeneity of thought. Inclusion with exclusion. In this ideology, speech is violence. But violence, when carried out by the right people in pursuit of a just cause, is not violence at all. In this ideology, bullying is wrong, unless you are bullying the right people, in which case it's very, very good. In this ideology, education is not about teaching people how to think. It's about re-educating them in what to think. In this ideology, the need to feel safe trumps the need to speak truthfully. Is that what you want out of our country? Is that an ideology that you believe in? Do you believe that someone's identity is more important than their ideas? Do you believe that in the pursuit of inclusivity, we should exclude people who don't agree with us? Do you believe that feelings are more important than facts? I know for sure what kind of country I want to live in, and a country that would punish a renowned HIV researcher because of what she wore to a Halloween party 13 years ago is not exactly what I had in mind. That's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast. If you like the podcast, consider becoming a paid subscriber to help continue this podcast and the rest of the Undivided suite of content. You can become a subscriber in two ways: on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. As always, thank you for listening, and thank you for being part of a movement dedicated to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.